This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Supreme Court, a decision about freedom of speech, and the decision is pending. So I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, writing and defining ideas about a case that is before the court now. However, we need to, about freedom of speech, we need to begin with a Supreme Court decision from many decades ago, argued March of 43, decided June of 43, with Mr. Justice Robert Jackson delivering the opinion of the court. It had to do with a school district and whether or not it was powerful enough to compel speech by students who belonged to the Jehovah's Witnesses. This speech compelled had to do with I Pledge Allegiance. So the court writes, the Board of Education moved to dismiss the complaint setting forth these facts and alleging that the law and regulations are an unconstitutional denial of religious freedom and freedom of speech and are invalid under the Due Process and Equal Protection Clauses of the 14th Amendment to the Federal Constitution. From this extremely complicated presentation, Richard is going to take us to the 21st century, but we begin with this idea of compelling speech. Richard, a very good evening to you. I did not know Justice Jackson's decision before you highlighted it. What does that tell the court about the freedom of speech in the First Amendment and how it must guard it? Good evening to you.
Well, I mean, it's great to be here. And to start, the Jackson opinion is fraught with a huge amount of controversy at the time. In 1940, somewhat before that, there was a case called Gobitis, in which Justice Felix Frankfurter, who's Jewish, right, issued the opinion that the need to maintain national loyalty in a time of political stress is sufficiently strong that we can require, in the name of national security, these Jehovah's Witnesses kids to say the Pledge of Allegiance, even though they regard it as a form of idolatry. And that the response to that opinion on the part of large numbers of civil libertarians of all stripes was immediate, hostile, really sort of disbelieving. And a couple of years later, they take it up again, and Jackson, who was not on the court, I believe, in 1940, but was appointed shortly thereafter, writes this opinion that there's one fixed star in our constitutional firmament, is that no official, however petty or high, can tell people what it is that they have to say or what they think. And the remedy that he was thinking of at that particular time was a simple accommodation. You simply allow them to stand respectfully in the room and you don't force them to engage in it. It is not the case that you were trying to say that the single Jehovah's Witness could take an entire room of people who are willing to say the Pledge of Allegiance and use his religious beliefs in order to shut them down. If you started to do that, there are many people who feel that they have a speech right as well and they want to exercise their conscience both on religious and speech grounds and political grounds, and what they want to do is to say the pledge. And that position essentially became very clear. Now, the issue is, what does it mean to compel somebody was raised in that case as well. And it was quite clear that nobody thought that you could put a gun to the head of these kids and make them say the Pledge of Allegiance. The penalty was that you were going to expel them from the school. And so that therefore they could not participate in the activity unless they met this condition. And there is this long doctrine called unconstitutional conditions, which says that when the government is running various kinds of operations or like a public school, there are certain limits on the conditions that it could attach to the way in which people work. And a fortiori, if it's a private body with greater degrees of independence, there should be, I think, even a greater awareness that the state has a very weak interest in telling private organizations how it is that they ought to run their operations. So that's what the setup is. And there was a time at which the decision that we had in the West Virginia case, Barnett, was accepted by every party. As we start moving forward, it turns out that the political left starts to move away from that decision in a complete reversal of position, because in the 1950s, the left wing, and rightly so, was very suspicious about loyalty oaths. You cannot take a job for the government unless you pledge allegiance to the flag and so forth. And now all of a sudden what we do is we see that the worm has turned and certain conditions that they think to be appropriate, they think the state can impose without penalty.
We come from the 20th century and Justice Jackson to 2018, Masterpiece Cake Shop Limited versus the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. This turns on the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act. This was before the court, and the court characterized the decision pending this way, whether applying a public accommodation law to compel an artist to speak or stay silent violates the free speech clause of the First Amendment. Does that decision derive from Justice Jackson's majority opinion in 1943?
Well, what happens is no. It turns out that there's a very key difference between the 2018 case and the current case. Back in 2018, what happened is Jack Phillips, who was a sole proprietor who made wedding cakes and had strong, deep convictions as a Christian, said, I'm willing to do business with anybody, but I'm not willing to do business with them under terms where I have to exercise my expressive powers in order to make a wedding cake, which essentially does not respect the kinds of religious beliefs that I have. And so two gay fellows came into the place. They asked for the cake. They knew they weren't going to get it. Then they reported him to the Colorado Commission and went down the block, and they got a cake from somebody else for free a couple hundred yards away. The commission then takes this up, and the case did not turn on the naked power. What happened is the commissioner sadly misbehaved. There was one woman who was in charge of the operation, and she started to say it was people like Jack Phillips who were responsible for the Holocaust, and that everybody knows that religious beliefs have led to the most ugly and invidious forms of discrimination. It was pretty raw stuff, and there were six other commissioners, and none of them peeped a word on the other side. Justice Kennedy was desperate to avoid facing the fundamental question of whether or not a quote-unquote perfectly virtuous commission can pose this. So what he did is he dismissed the case on the grounds that these people had shown evident bias, but he didn't throw the case out. He sent it back down to a remand so that poor Jack Phillips would go through another round of torture before this particular body. And I thought it was a terrible decision on his particular part. There was then some fairly intense sniping between Justice Elena Kagan and Justice Neil Gorsuch, she basically being of the opinion that the basic idea is sound, and Gorsuch being more of a libertarian, being very chary about the way in which the whole thing runs. And one of the kind of sub-issues is, what about reciprocity? Can a gay baker decide not to make a cake for a religious person? And the answer in Colorado is yes. It turns out if the speech is offensive, you don't have to do it. So what you do is you get this situation, we can force thee, but you cannot force us. And so there it stopped, and everybody knew that the question was going to come back again. And in this particular case, after many times in which the lower courts have affirmed the power of these commissions to impose these obligations, what happens is the woman in this case, Ms. Lori Smith, she is frightened to death of opening up this particular business and going through the kind of torture that went through with respect to Jack Phillips. And so what she does is she moves for a declaratory judgment before the fact, saying that she's entitled to do this. And the Colorado Commission responds, and they say, no, you're not allowed to get out of this thing. And so the issue is fairly joined. Since there has been no enforcement action, there is no way to demonstrate whether or not they harbor the same kind of bad vices that the same commission harbored 4 years before. So the case is going up to the Supreme Court on the ground that it turns out, they say, that the sorts of behavior here may be expressive. There may well be a duty of strict scrutiny, but the state interest in protecting everybody to have access to every firm is so strong that we analogize the baker here as a monopolist, as somebody who has unique powers over the market or a unique place inside the market. And so they turn it down. It goes to the 10th Circuit. It's a very bitter decision, 2-1. And the court there upholds the Colorado Commission. And the Chief Justice Timkovich, an excellent judge, he dissents. And up it goes to the Supreme Court. And the legal issue is now fairly joined.
The case is 303 Creative versus Elinus. It's before the court. Richard has signed an amicus brief for this case. And I want to understand, Richard, what you just explicated. The citizen in question is Lori Smith. She does not bake cakes. She creates websites. And she says in her documents that she serves all individuals regardless of race, creed, sexual orientation, or gender, with one exception. And the exception is she will not design a website, and then she lists for whom she will not design it because of her religious beliefs. Now, designing a website is not the same as baking a cake. It looks
it's
very
more
much
purely
like,
expressive.
It looks very close to freedom of speech. and what you can and cannot be compelled. Do I read that correctly? This connects better to Jackson than the Masterpiece Cake Shop did.
It's a stronger case if you care about irrelevant detail. What happened is Philip said, I'm making cakes. This is an art form that I engage in, and art forms are protected under the First Amendment and under the religion clauses. She says, I'm not making a cake, so that you can't say that I'm doing something else like a physical act. The only thing I'm doing is designing a website. That's pure speech. And what happens is the 10th Circuit agrees with that. It also agrees that to suppress pure speech, you have to show a very powerful justification under a doctrine called strict scrutiny. And then miraculously, it says the control of this kind of monopoly business is that kind of justification. And what happens is everybody who knows something about this realizes that the nature of the coercion is really quite dramatic in this case. I mean, it's Orwellian. They're starting to tell you how they have to re-educate you. And as far as I'm concerned, the education efforts to tell people who are religious that they should not be religious will not allow their religion to intrude into the way they do their work is a real form of government despotism, which we all ought to oppose. But then you said it's a monopoly, so we could regulate you as a monopoly. So it turns out there are 1,000 towns of houses in Colorado. They're all distinct from one another. We don't have one competitive mark of the slightly different houses. What we have in the eyes of the Colorado Supreme Court is we have 1,000 little monopolies, each of which is a kite, an acre wide.
We need to go to the classical liberal understanding of harm, all right, when we come back.
Yeah.
Richard
sure.
has been teaching me classical liberalism for several years now, and I'm always eager for an update. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.